All right, welcome to the Bangers List podcast, where in reality we just talk about things you could figure out for yourself on Spotify in about 3 seconds. We've got such beautiful gravelly voices that you listen to us instead.
That's boys. Correct. Well, I would have said Wikipedia because Spotify doesn't. You and I can't stop doing that. Spotify doesn't give you a lot of artist information. I'd say Wikipedia, but then you've got to go to that Wikipedia fact or fiction video on YouTube as
then
well.
Then you have to read instead of listen.
Then you end up in a YouTube hole.
Yeah. And so what you're saying is we're better. We're the preferred kind of thing to hear.
I wouldn't say better. I'd say preferred.
Yeah, but like the information like from us, it's
like drowning and being
really
electrocuted, one's preferred. You know what I mean? Like, right, what are we doing this week, Joel?
So we're talking about a song called I Hate It, released in 2018 by, you know, a band that's been around for a long time, Under Oath. So for all, you know, you emos. Is that the word you'd use?
Why'd you look at me when you said that, man?
Because you've got no hair.
Because you had a fringe back in the day.
Now the listeners know, man.
If you had hair, it would be a fringe.
Just a fringe.
Yeah, so we'll jump into a sample and then we'll talk about the song and why it's on the list. Yeah.
A slightly more retarded version of a presidential debate, and you're just the moderator. You occasionally step in and just sort of steer the conversation. So I don't know that I'd call that like emo. I don't know. They were probably definitely. They were sort of associated with that sort of subgenre as well. They're sort of a hard band to categorize. I put this song on the playlist in case nobody cared. Everybody did. No, thank you. Anyway, this was from sort of their, I don't know, people use the word screamo, and that fucking tilts me, something chronic, eh? Like it really tilts me.
Why? Let's just take a step back. Why does the word screamo fuck you off so hard?
Because I get irritated by everything very easily. You've known me for nearly 10 years.
Oh, fair enough.
Because growing up as a metalhead, and not having a lot of metalhead friends, which I'm sure you can both sort of appreciate.
Yeah.
That was the go-to word for people that wanted to give my music shit. And so, oh, how do you listen to that screamo shit? And I think we've talked about this before. That's probably the main reason it bothers me unnecessarily.
So you're saying it's ignorance?
Yes.
Okay.
Because screamo is a subgenre that was fucking terrible.
Okay.
And I believe I've said that in a podcast before as well. Anyway, we're in a temporal loop now, so we don't even need to record a podcast. Under Oath, they're from Florida.
That's right. Yeah.
Not Ocala. Well, that would be interesting.
That would be a day to remember.
Yes. And there's some other band that's from Ocala as well. Who
there's
is
probably
it?
So many.
I don't know. We know them. I just can't think of who it is. Don't fucking look at me like that.
We don't play games and bangers this podcast.
No. Anyway, I'm waffling now, but they've gone through a few lineup changes since they started.
Oh, they have. I thought it was the same group of friends for the whole time. But
no, have you heard of City in Color?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dallas Green?
Mm-hmm.
He was the original lead singer of Under Oath for the first three records.
Okay. Because they started back in
97.
Yeah, really early. Maybe first album 2000-ish, maybe 2002. But so that's a long time. I was going to say if they hadn't had any changes, it would be crazy, but it makes more sense.
They had a couple of records before that. The lineup they have now has been arguably the most stable, even though their drummer left for a little while. So basically their drummer, Aaron Gillespie, did all of the records except one, which was not the one they've just done, but the song's from the one before that. It was called O. It's the O with a slash through it. That's the sort of their logo. So he'd left and went, fuck all you guys, I'm going home to eat cake and when did that, so. But he was present for all of them.
Let's break out more a bit on that. So they were labelled as a Christian band for a long time.
Let's
jump to that real quick because you're talking about band members leaving. They basically broke up because, they said themselves kind of immaturity and the Christianity side to all of their lives, kind of keeping secrets from each other and disagreeing on how songs sound, and then they broke up, right?
Yeah.
And so that all... One of them became a drug addict. Another guy was doing something that they would have frowned
Spencer
upon.
Spencer Chamberlain, the screamer, was he had a drug problem for a long time. Mm. Like it wasn't just as a result of like the band breaking up or breaking the band up. He actually had like some problems for a while.
Yeah.
So,
which would have obviously made tension in the band as it does. It's very hard to write music with someone that's fucked in.
Greenspoon, for instance.
Yeah.
Greenspoon, yeah. You know, sometimes you can make it work and sometimes you can't.
Substance abuse is very hard to deal with, is what I'm saying, for people living or not living, working with the person, right?
Yeah.
So they broke up and all that stuff. Now they've come back together. And the big thing that I've seen from them and their music now is that they do not want to be labeled as a Christian band. We've talked about that before. Very cool. Moving on from that, they're going to make their own decisions and not follow someone else's.
Well, part of it too. Part of it too. I read because around the time the Erase Me record came out, I was actually starting to get a bit of a buzz on for it. And originally they had there was a documentary they did, I think, and they sort of said that a couple of them basically denounced their faith at some point, sort of during that later years process before they got back together. And one of the things they've said retrospectively of being that Christian hardcore sort of whatever you want to call it band was that everything they did was really heavily sort of criticized or critiqued. Obviously there's no profanity except on this record. It's the first time they have the word fuck on a record, so they didn't do that. And then the way they acted and sort of carried themselves around the scene, I guess, was very heavily critiqued because I'm not going to say every person that's a Christian is a cunt, but a lot of them can be cunts about it. You know what I mean? There's this really sort of eyes wide shut kind of fit in or fuck off mentality.
Yes, and we've talked about that before.
So that was really stressful for them because they were we have to make another Under Oath record, make it sound the same and stuff like that. So that was one thing they touched on. And then around the time the record came, just before the record came out, they put out the lead single, which is we'll go into it later, but it's called On My Teeth.
Yes, which was
it's a pretty good song actually, and that was it had a swear word in it, and this caused huge waves in certain parts of their following. I'm not going to say purely the Christian element, but there was a fair amount of the sort of all Christian based fans that were complaining about it and saying this is not okay, you can't do this. And Spencer Chamberlain's response was a 35 year old man saying the word fuck should not be at your top of your priority list of to get worried about.
And on top of that, to denounce your faith, I know we're probably not really...
Well, some of them still are, some of them aren't.
Yeah, but the gravity of the situation, I know we don't make it seem serious. It's actually very hard for people to do that, to leave their faith and they might lose family members and friends, etc. So that's very hard in itself, and I imagine it would be quite stressful, right?
Yeah.
And they just come along, do it, and then try and still give music to their fans. You should. I guess I'd be more appreciative because I'm oh, thanks, but I also agree with what they've done. Denounce your faith, live how you want to live. Write music how you want to write music without this stuff holding you back. And that's probably a polarizing kind of opinion or something to say, because if people are Christian, maybe they wouldn't agree with that at all. I'd say you should need to follow your faith and keep writing music as we expect you to, because that's the world you are a part of.
That's what you are to me, or what you are to us.
Yeah.
And I think that illustrates a very strong point, which we can actually touch on with this record, about people that are fans of bands not being able to let go what a band was, has been, sort of thing. we talked about this in the Parkway episode. I was happy to sort of say I don't like their new stuff and I prefer their old stuff, but whatever.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. A lot of people still have that problem, especially when it comes to something like this that you have this deeply rooted faith as well. I think that sort of influences it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
Look, I agree with that latter part. Hey, don't laugh at me, man. Don't laugh at me.
It's very hard for us to talk about because we've had zero religious kind of stuff in our lives, I think. So it's very hard to understand the gravity of it. But yeah, anyway.
Look, I didn't know about their background so much, about their faith and everything like that. That's kind of new to me, so I can't provide a lot of sort of commentary on that aspect. But when you do talk about the fact that, people are very kind of very caught up on the roots of a band.
They're very territorial.
And they expect that and nothing else. And and if it's not that, then they're not happy. And it sort of transcends
into something that isn't even related to the music whatsoever. It's just someone's faith.
Yeah,
I guess
that's right. It's in this case, those Parkway fans is their faith in that particular band. They wanted Killing with a Smile,
Horizons Volume 15.
And rather than supporting the band and watching them grow and evolve, they're so caught up on that. It's like, well, just listen to that album then.
It's weird how selfish we become.
It's not going anywhere. Yeah.
And our expectations, if they're subverted, we get really upset.
Look, and like you said before, that you'd never really had a lot to do with sort of religion. I have. I grew up going to a couple of different religious schools. One side of my family is religious and a lot of my friends were religious. Well, I won't get too bunking into it, but it's anecdotal, so call it a three or whatever, but I have seen a really sort of toxic culture come out of religion, I'm not going to say which one per se, but I have seen that very, if you sort of stray from the path, you can be seen as like, they use the word backsliding. You know, people like, people aren't strong in their faith and stuff like that. So when I read a lot of the stuff that Aaron and Spencer were talking about, I sort of, not through my own direct experiences, but through the experiences of the people around me as I grew up and friends of mine, I definitely sort of understood, not so much sympathized, but understood. I'd seen it before, I guess. So
you could vaguely understand what they may be.
100%, yeah. And when it comes to any kind of like sect or religion or whatever, there is always going to be a toxic element, just like there is with any kind of culture. Like, you know, any kind of culture, I think, like gaming, music, fucking, I can't think of anything else. Sports,
yeah.
You know, there's always a toxic element. So I'm just really reaching for that last one there. But you get what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Anyway, look, we'll move on to the song itself. Yeah,
why this song? Of all songs, like they have some, look, they have some heavier stuff and they have some, well, this is their newer stuff, I guess, so that makes sense. But they have heavier stuff in this album. This is
their most recent album,
correct? It is most recent this is album.
It's called Erase Me.
Yeah. Yeah. And so why this one?
The title's actually from this song. Okay. Is it? No, it's not. No,
this is I Hate It.
No. The record title.
Mm.
Yeah, it's from one of the other songs. I got that wrong.
Yeah.
Thanks, Shel. Anyway, why this song? Well, there's that one song I'd showed you of theirs like 5 years ago, which we'll talk about later, that I really liked, but it's the bangers list, so it's got to be new. So I'd listened through the record, and I guess in a similar vein to Hang the Mason, I thought, well, this is one of those songs that's sort of out there. It's not like super heavy, but maybe you and Daniel would like it as well. So I just
and the other people that listen to the playlist might like it as well. Or like, you know, I'm one of those people that just puts it on shuffle now and then when I can't think of what I want to listen to.
It is a very sort of downtrodden song, but I did think that it's broad enough that people can connect with it in whatever capacity. So
yeah,
Spencer Chamberlain wrote it as a former drug addict.
Yeah, let's take a moment to just thank him. Yeah. He does a lot of work for this band. I think he writes a lot of their music and he can do a bit of singing, right? And
yeah.
And he plays guitar as well.
He does play guitar, so yes. So
a very talented guy, and he's gone through the drug addiction, come out on the other side, right? And now he's living.
I think he'd been about a year clean and sober when they recorded.
Yeah, well, good on him. So shout out to him. That's good stuff.
Yeah, because that's a big thing too, because, you know, I think we've talked before about people that just like can't get their fucking shit together when it comes to like addictions and stuff. Yeah. So, you know, it's good to see someone actually pull through on that.
Yeah. So like the song kind of starts a bit slow and melodramatic. And when I originally heard it, I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like this. Did you have that same kind of feeling? Like, oh, it doesn't really do much here.
Yeah, I was like, what is this song? Yeah. I hate it.
Get the fuck out.
Whatever the opposite of meta is, that's what that was. It was like anti-meta.
You don't say much. The things you do say.
Comes in with some absolute zingers.
But
you love your KFC, mate, the way you serve those zingers up.
Oh, shit. It's one of those songs that being on the bangers list, just listening to the bangers list on shuffle, it's not one that I'd stop and listen to often. It'd be one of the ones I'd more often skip past. But once you actually, I think, take a bit of time to let it sink in and then listen to it properly, I think you can appreciate it a bit
it's
more.
It's not an every time.
That's right. It's even for me. Got to be in the mood.
Yeah.
Because that slow, almost melodramatic start can be off-putting and get you out of your mood or whatever. But it does, it kind of like undulates itself towards like a really heavy ending. I'd say the last half or last quarter of the song is quite heavy. The screaming comes in, there's more screaming towards the end of the song, the guitar gets heavier, less like finger picking of chords, really. It just gets progressively heavier, and the chorus is quite heavy. Rather than going from like screaming in the verse to singing in the chorus, they've got singing in the verse to screaming in the chorus in some parts
kind of it. Yeah, it's both of them. It's Spencer Chamberlain and Aaron Gillespie. So he's actually, he's drums and sings, and he has done their whole career.
Oh, what a champion.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, and that's, so it's fucking.
How much of the singing would you say he takes on?
When they do it live, they do the chorus together. Spencer does the verses, and I think Aaron does some of the verse, like the last line or two, I think he does with him. I think he does, if it's good for me, then it's good for you. I think he does that line. But I know they do the chorus together. It's funny, actually. I watched a couple of live clips of them, like just you search for I Hate It Live, and they've done like a couple of radio appearances, and it's the singer playing guitar, and the drummer playing guitar, and the rest of the band's just fucking nowhere to be seen. So the guitarists are like, what do we do? It's cool. We get to go on holiday for this one. So, and they, you know, a lot of people gave Spencer Chamberlain shit. They said, oh, he can't sing as well as Aaron. It's like, well, fuck, he's screamed his whole life. Like, now he's trying something a bit softer. Just quickly as well. I actually did draw a few similarities between this record and Misery by The Amity Affliction. They came in around similar times. They were both kind of a band that had been doing like a heavy, hardcore sort of thing for a while, trying something different. And Spencer Chamberlain actually turned around and said, if we were still a metalcore band or a hardcore band or whatever, I'd still be a fucking drug addict. This wouldn't work. So basically, if you don't like it not being super heavy, then you're just going to have to deal with it, because the record itself actually has... It's not super heavy. There's only one or two songs on it that are like sort of their older style hardcore. Think the transition from like There Is a Hell, Believe Me, I've Seen It by Bring Me to Sempiternal. You know, there was a bit of that older style metal, like that Shadow Moses had a bit, but then there was just them trying something new.
I remember years and years ago, some of their first music was quite whiny.
It was that very like screamy kind of hardcore.
Yeah.
Like post-hardcore, what it sort of was. Like,
the song is called A Boy
Brushed Living in Black and White.
Yeah, so that was the singing in that one was very... Yeah. It wasn't like metalcore like we always talk about. It was just...
No, it was more like post-hardcore, definitely.
And the emo element, I say, and it was quite whiny in some of the
nasally voices.
Very nasally, yeah. So they've gone through a lot of change in their sound and hit this thing here. So
yeah, and it comes back to things we've talked about before. Like, you don't have to like it. Just don't shit on them about it. Do you know what I mean? I was shitting on a Data Rumors new song the other day.
Yeah, right. Rich.
No, just because one of my mates that doesn't like metalcore at all was like, have you heard this song before? And I'm like, oh, I don't want to have this discussion. Yes, I've listened to them for a decade. Yes, I'm going to be an asshole about this. You know, you can feel yourself winding up to be an ignorant cunt, but you still do it anyway because you're just stubborn. You're like, I want Homesick Again, you know?
Yes. I feel that.
Yeah. But you've just got to suppress that and sort of move on, because there are good bits you can find on this record too. It definitely has its merits, even if it's not my brand of not heavy.
My brand of Under Oath.
Yes.
Lyrics, mate, guys. So I don't know what the song is about, to be honest. Lyric, I understand it's a little bit of maybe someone or something that is the only thing that gets them high. Obviously, it says in the chorus. There's got to be more to it than that.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed is he says he's tangled up in my own image, but hey, who's staring back at me? So he doesn't recognize himself from what he's become. I think that's a really powerful line there. Love that one.
Yeah.
He also screams, God, erase me. I don't know if that's because he wants his faith to forgive
him. I was looking at the wrong bit of the lyrics there.
Oh, yeah.
It is the title, yeah.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure if God erase me meant, like I said, it's him trying to forget his faith, or he wants God to erase him from existence or whatever, but there is some powerful lyrics in this song.
Look, I hadn't looked at those lines so much, but yeah, the God erase me is a very powerful one for sure. And running my eyes over them, I sort of got the idea it was someone who's maybe possibly relapsed, from the perspective of someone who's possibly gone back into, like, he talks about going back into old habits in the first verse, I think. And then he's lost someone as a result of that. So not someone that's necessarily died or anything, but just, you know, he's lost a relationship because of that, whether it be a friend or a partner or whatever. And he's come to the realization that it was all his fault, I'm guessing it's from his perspective, but it's all his fault, and that he's come to that realization after the fact, and he's realized that he can't do anything without this person, hence you're the only thing that gets me high.
So very introspective kind of song lyrically, I guess, then.
So you're both shit, because I actually read what it's about before.
You got one back.
No.
Is it about drug facts?
Here we go.
No, the joke to that is every other time I've had something that I thought was the truth, Joel's just come in because he's like mega researched it. just railroaded me with it. No, hang on, over here. Look.
Oh, shit, a brick, and then fuck me with it. What happened there?
All right. Where the fuck did that come from? No, basically, the understanding is, through their description of it, is that it's about something, and you both sort of hit the nail on the head. It's something that you keep coming back to that's fucking so horrible for you, but you can't stop doing it.
Okay.
And you know how absolutely fucking cancerous and self-destructive it is. So, you know, he's actually talked about this on other songs before, and one of those is we'll talk about later, but that one that I showed you as well, that is sort of talking about his drug problem, because it was a drug problem he had, and it's sort of never got mentioned directly, but I think with this, he's done well to not specifically pigeonhole this like sort of toxic thing. It's, you think, you know, you might think it's a person, you think it's maybe like, you know, drugs or alcohol or like any kind of really bad thing for you. So I think my take on it is that's what it's about, but they've done really well to encompass all and sundry when it comes to things that are bad for you, not just saying you will only identify this song if you have had a drug problem before.
Yeah,
more. Or if you've, you know, been in a domestic violence relationship or like something that's, you know, so really
a lot
bad.
Of people could connect with the song.
In that's their my own point. Way. Yeah. Ultimately, that's my point. Yeah. I think they've encompassed it well.
Very good.
So obviously, you know, the whole I'm a user, you know, people can use you or you can use people, you can use drugs, you can use situations, you can use a lot of things. It's not specifically intrinsic to substance abuse.
Yeah.
So.
And something else I think they've gotten away with in this song lyrically is that this is probably a more of a pop element, is that they haven't used any rhyming in the lyrics really, but there's a lot of melody.
Yeah.
And the melody is what actually makes it almost seem like it's flowing along and rhyming, but it's not. I think very few of the words rhyme at all.
No, they don't.
So it's an interesting kind of thing that I noticed, and I think a lot of bands that we have talked about previously will rhyme and try and write things in that pop-inspired way almost, you know?
I mean, that's the go-to, isn't it?
It is, and it's not necessarily easier, but I think it's a lot harder to write a song like this, which has the catchy melodies, the catchy kind of chorus. Yeah. And, yeah.
I think they're both hard. Like,
either way.
Writing songs is hard.
They're both fucking hard, but for different reasons. Like, to write like this with no rhymes, you're not constricted by rhyming patterns and syllables and stuff like that.
Mm.
But then you are faced with the challenge of making it sound not like you're speaking, like you're not making it sound not like spoken word.
Yeah, it lacks structure, doesn't it? Don't have that template to work off.
You can't use like an A B or an A C like, you know, a rhyming pattern of some description. Yeah.
There is some rhymes. Just so I don't get called out, there is some rhyming.
What,
in the song.
You and you,
and there is also seek and weak, but but mostly it's not. The song isn't aiming on rhyming to
it's not leaning on the rhyming syllable.
Yeah, it's not a fat pop hook to like
a fat pop hook.
Fat pop hook.
Hey, crunchy riff.
Here we go. Term of the day.
Is that, you edited out me leaving last week as well. I noticed that. I thought that was going to stay there. Yeah, look, I think both of them are difficult. I think because this one would have come from some are very heartfelt, like a lot of the record. I think you probably didn't struggle too much to put it together, so.
Yeah, maybe it's a talent to just like write down how you're feeling, write down some words and be like, all right, guys, this makes no sense. It's a mess. Let's just make a song out of it.
Boom. And we've spoken about this before, but different artists have different, I can't remember which podcast it was, but different artists have different, or writers rather, have different approaches to how their music comes together. Yeah. Some people prefer to.
Well, it wasn't Trent's Dead Kingdom we talked about.
it wasn't that. It was a while ago. Some people prefer to get the music down first and write the lyrics at the top of that because they've got that structure they can work off.
They know
that.
Where the beats are and
they can fit things in. Whereas other people, and I dare say that, you know, this could have been the case in this instance, for I Hate It, but because it's more lyrically driven and doesn't necessarily seem to stick to a particular structure, then perhaps this is the lyrics that come together.
You know what I mean? Yeah, the song's a bit more simplistic as well. It, you know, it does have that verse, chorus, and there's that little bit of the end and the screamy bit, and then it's just straight into a chorus again. So I think it does help if you're writing in this style. It may help if you're writing in this style to know that you only have to sound pretty, for want of a better description, for, you know, 10 bars or 8 bars. Well, it's never 10. It's all, you know, for 8 bars or whatever. And then you go to the chorus, and the chorus is 2 lines, you know what I mean? So, but it's very effective. And I think this is the Temporal Loop podcast, but it says a lot about a writer that can use very few words to stretch out over a whole chorus.
Yeah, they say 3 words worth 3 words and pitches worth 1,000, but if you make 3 words worth 1,000 words, you're doing all right?
That's right. Like, it was All My Friends Are Dead, we talked about it. The chorus is like one line.
Yeah.
It's one line, but it's really well done because it's not super repetitive.
Yeah, and usually the chorus is meant to be the hook of most songs to pull you in to want to listen to it again.
Like the anchoring point, I guess.
Yeah, but imagine if you didn't have, like, I don't know, drug addiction or you'd never been in a relationship. What would you write about if you're a music person? You'd be country.
I was talking to some friends about this the other week, actually, because my girlfriend and a friend of mine, who's married to another friend of mine, they both love, like, the older school sort of emo stuff, like Fall Out Boy and Panic at the Disco and shit like that.
Brendan Urie is a great singer. I'll say it.
Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, I usually make fun of that sort of music, although I'm now banned from doing that apparently. Anyway, the point I wanted to get to was think about all the fucking horrible shit that all these people had to go through to make the music that we love and like cherish so much.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to get too deep for a second, but you know what I mean? Like, I stopped and thought about that. I don't know why my brain went straight to Slipknot and some of the fucking things that Corey Taylor's come out with over the years. But just think about the shit that that guy went through to put his brain where it ended up to write that. Do you know what I mean? You listen to that, you say that or you hear that and you go, oh, okay, well, maybe I'm not going to give this like emo band so much shit because like, you know, they obviously someone's had a, like, you know, a not good day or a bad day that's led to a song that has thousands of people like just singing in unison when they see them live.
Yeah. That's so, the beauty of music, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. That was just sort of a perspective that I hadn't really taken on before. So. You know, all the shit that Spencer Chamberlain would have to go, the highs and lows, you know, just being fucked up on drugs constantly and not having anyone to talk to and feeling isolated and so on and so forth. Like, it led to some music that we like a little bit. You know?
So for us, thank you.
The part-time consumers, thank you very much. Similar bands, let's do that. Oh, actually, random shit. My brother went and saw these guys live in Sydney and he got a photo of with Spencer and Aaron wearing a shirt with my band at the time's logo on it. That's the only thing I have to say about this band.
Hell yeah.
I've never seen any of them live.
That's still pretty cool.
Oh, no, we did. We saw them. They supported when we were working at the place with the things. We went up on the Friday, remember? We went up in my red car and they were supporting A Day to Remember. And Jeremy came out in the big Zorba ball. You were there for that.
No.
We were working together. I know we were.
I didn't go.
You didn't go with us.
I wasn't a fan of it.
Ah, okay. Well, anyway, I was standing in the crowd, like, waiting for Under Oath to come on. At this point, I wasn't really that big on them. And just before they came out, I just yelled out, this isn't fucking Katy Perry. What the hell? And these chicks in front of me that all had, like, really old Under Oath shirts on turned around and gave me a fucking stare that could have melted a steel beam. And I remember watching them. And their keyboard player, like, I'm sure he's a great bloke, he looked like he was having a seizure for most of the show. But he was having the best time. He was, like, just jump. Like, you can't really, like, mosh when you're a keyboard player. They do that weird thing where they jump and they keep their keys on the finger. But you can tell that they're not, like, their fingers are staying perfectly still and their body's moving around.
Yeah, but all right, guys, we're going to this one part of the body you can't move and it'll be your hands around. You're trying to dance with your hands in one spot.
Yeah, just like, he was just shaking his head around like a weirdo and he had this laptop that he knocked off a half dozen times. So they're actually really good. So, yeah, I did have a story about that. I could have sworn you were there for that show as well.
Isn't it weird how you just forget things like whole episodes and concerts? Yeah, bands like them, there'll be a lot out there in that, I guess, you know, what would you say, Death Cab for Cutie, Cutie's What We Aim For, kind of that genre, but they've also transcended that to become, you know, I'm not going to say metalcore this week, but they have obviously a lot of metal aspects in a lot of their songs.
Heavier,
hardcore. So that's my two bands that are similar, but at the same time, I don't actually listen to them.
I don't have a huge amount of exposure to that particular style back in the day, but well, that's one, but also two, I'd say Norma Jean again and The Chariot. I've said them before for a different band, but those two bands were in a way similar in the early days.
You just love those bands for everything.
No, well, they work really well. Like, they're a little bit heavier, but they had that kind of like screechy vocals with the, I guess you could even say like story of the year in a way.
Oh yeah.
If you wanted to, you know, admit that you've heard shit music before.
we all have.
Yeah. So I would say those two.
Look, I don't know if I can provide much input here. I'm sorry, fellas.
Oh, good. We'll move on.
But this is this is actually one of the few songs I've heard by them. Like, we went for the bangers list. I had heard of Under Oath, obviously, but not a band I've ever really given much time.
I think I was the same growing up in school. I mean, like, if you listen to Under Oath, you're emo. Like,
that was very much how I was as a kid, yeah. My brother loved these guys. He actually bought me their Define the Great Line record for my 14th birthday, knowing that I would hate it and give it to him. Weird. So he basically bought himself a CD by proxy of my birthday.
Smooth.
Yes, I used to give him shit for that, but it was a very smooth move, and I'll give him that. It turns out that record's actually pretty good.
Well, you knew what he was talking about then.
But Banks.
No, so song's worth a listen.
Oh, fuck. Well, yeah, that first one we talked about. What else?
I Hate It.
Uh-huh. No, the one, the red boy in the black and white
one. Oh, Boy Brush Red?
Yeah.
I would say from this record, because On My Teeth was the lead single, a lot of people would have heard it. I would say the first track, it has to start somewhere because it's got a nice balance between sort of aggression, despondency, and their sort of more poppy end. And then for Old Shit, it would be 100% a song called Anyone Can Dig a Hole, But It Takes a Real Man to Call It Home.
That's my favorite saying of all time.
It is. It's a very good saying as well. So I've known about that one for quite a number of years now. It's a very, very well done song. That's the song I was talking about earlier that Spencer Chamberlain wrote when he was all fucked up on drugs. And it's basically his way of saying to his band, please don't fire me. I'm fucked and I don't know how to fix it.
Oh,
like, I don't know. Like, he got himself into a position that he'd sort of gone, fuck, I'm basically ruining my own life right now. It's time to take a little bit of responsibility for it.
Which is very hard to do.
Absolutely.
There you go.
MVPs, eh?
MVPs, most valuable. Should we move on to the best?
No, look, I'll give it to Aaron Gillespie because he contributed vocally. And I think that's a good effort to do, especially when it comes to, obviously, on the recording, it's a bit different, but live, you could pre-relay. It's probably fucking hard to do, right?
It's not easy to drum sing. He's also blind in one eye and colorblind in the other.
Okay, well then.
Holy fuck.
That's like a 3.5 to 4. I know he has vision problems. I'm just not sure if he's
fully blind. A drummer that's visually impaired. I mean, hands down MVP. And I do like his drum work. You listen carefully. Like, he uses the cymbals really nicely in his song.
He doesn't use a China. He's just got three crashes.
Yeah. And he uses it simply. I love that. But if it's a simple kit, it's used effectively.
He does that. So I would say also Aaron Gillespie for MVP for very similar reasons.
I was going to say something different, but No, I don't have anything different to say. It is extremely hard to play the drums and sing if it's a polyrhythm and you haven't learnt it. In your head, you know what I mean? Like, if you're trying to play,
it doesn't come to you naturally.
Yeah, it's quite the thing about polyrhythms is it's like two different rhythms, and that's hard enough to do. And then if you're trying to sing on top of playing a polyrhythm, it can, if you haven't practiced, it can confuse the fuck out of your brain, and you make a mess, and you go out of time, and it causes all sorts of problems.
Mm.
Personally, maybe it's different for a drummer because they obviously can get independent limbs, I guess you'd call it. Each limb can independently do a rhythm.
I think you have to practice it no matter what. He would absolutely practice singing because he's got to get all of his breathing right, for starters. Like, I used to do mostly uncleans when I drummed, and they were just backing vocals, but like, there was a couple of songs where I'd be going sort of like a really intense part, but then I'd have to cue up a big scream, so I'd have to take a breath at a weird time to let out this sort of big scream while I was in the middle of like weird breathing, so if that makes sense. So yeah, it's definitely not easy, and I don't think everyone can do it. Some people can just disconnect their face from their body, yeah, and just I'm going to use my face and my lungs for a different thing. So
yeah, it's very hard, very talented. So good on him for being the MVP of this song. And the lyrics are quite good as well. But anyway.
Do we know any other good drummers out there that often sing?
Atreyu.
Yeah, the Atreyu guy.
Yeah, they were fucking sick when we saw them live in 2010 at No Sleep Till Sydney. I didn't know he was the clean singer. I'd only heard a few of their songs.
It was a surprise, like, just to see him. He's drumming along really fast, and then he just spins his head to the side and just starts singing. And his extremely rich tones, hits all the notes really well. So he's another person that does that.
Yeah. Oh, fuck, what are they called? Chelsea Grin.
Yep.
I've seen a drum playthrough live of their drummer, and it didn't occur to me that he hit a mic in the thumbnail, and he lets out this fucking beastly scream. Like, massive, dude. That was impressive. So Fran Mark from From Autumn to Ashes, we talked about him. He was the drummer for the majority of their career, and he also sang too.
It's probably a lot of people do it.
Yeah.
More than we know.
It's not common you get a really good one, though.
And to skip past our ignorance on drummers that sing, how many bangs this week?
I'm not going first because I put this song on here. I'm going to get crushed.
I'm
about to get bullied here.
Towards the end of the song, it does, like I said, it gets heavier, harder, it bangs a bit. I'm going to give it a 6. That's not to say I don't like it. It is worth a listen. It has other factors in the song that make it good and worth a listen. So 6 from me.
I'm basically on the same page as you here. It took me a while to really get into this song, and in saying I didn't really get into it, but I can appreciate it now. And look, it's just one of those songs. It just sort of, for me, it stayed pretty kind of steady throughout. Didn't quite get there for me at the end, but it does bang pretty hard towards the end, like that bridge section.
You wanted more from the bangers.
Yeah, I just
wanted
a bit more, but it's it does, you know, it it's it does sort of go off a bit towards the end when you get to that bridge section, and it gets that little bit more intense. And it's not a bad song. I'd give it a 5.5.
Boom.
7. That's it.
We don't need to break down our answers. We're just going to fucking tell you what's up.
I like this band. I like this song. It isn't everything we look for. I've got a fucking weird habit of putting stuff like this on. It's just not... doesn't have breakdowns and stuff. For someone that loves metalcore as much as I do.
Yeah.
Like Hang the Masons, Spiders.
Weird.
Fucking, I just...
Fuck you and all your friends.
Hey, that bangs, though.
No. Yeah.
It's got a little bit of baggage in it.
Well, like, how many breakdowns does this song have?
None.
There you go.
So it's a zero. Hard? No.
But, like, imagine this. Imagine you're a Christian rock band like these guys were, and then the Pope comes out and he's like, masturbation is no longer a sin. And then there's like all these people in hell for masturbating. Like, what?
How late last night were you up thinking about that?
Fucking very late.
I guess I normally wake up at 5 a.m. thinking about stuff like that. Like, I do all my shower thinking in the morning. Not a night.
I guess on that perfect note to end the podcast on, we'll end the podcast on that note. What do you guys think?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, righto.
Talk to us on Twitter. Keep those songs coming. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you all very soon. Peace.